This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, there's been an update on the Uhuru 3. In April 2023, the Uhuru 3 were indicted by the U.S. government on bogus charges of being agents of a foreign government. Because of the Uhuru movement's over 50 years' work to advocate for the liberation and unification of Africa and forcibly dispersed African people everywhere. The charges levied on the Uhuru 3 came 9 months after the FBI and local police violently raided 7 homes and properties of the African People's Socialist Party and Uhuru movement in St. Louis, Missouri, and St. Petersburg, Florida on July 29, 2022. These charges carry prison sentences of up to 15 years. And from an official statement by Chairman Amale Yeshitela on behalf of the Uhuru 3, including Penny Hess and today's guest, Jesse Neville, this is Chairman Amale Yeshitela's statement. On September 12, 2024, a jury in the federal courthouse in Tampa, Florida, repudiated the more serious charge of the U.S. government's frame-up of the Uhuru 3 by finding myself, along with Penny Hess and Jesse Neville, not guilty of being agents of the Russian government. The prosecutors unleashed a barrage of lies and distortions of the law, along with deliberately confusing jury instructions to mislead the jury into returning an inconsistent verdict, convicting us on the lesser charge of conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States, which we intend to appeal and are confident we will win. But more importantly, the jury's not guilty verdict on the Russian agents charge means that the jurors agreed with the legitimacy of our efforts to advocate for the liberation of Africa and African people. So yeah, they were acquitted of being Russian agents, but they are still as a conspiracy charge. So they need support for their upcoming appeal and sentencing hearing. So they're urging people to submit letters to the judge as we approach our sentencing date scheduled for November 25th. After which we intend to file a motion to appeal the conspiracy conviction. Stay tuned to handsoffuhuru.org in the coming days for more details. So today I've got Jesse Neville on the Uhuru 3 and the FBI raid. We're still having a COINTELPRO in the 21st century, apparently. So that's coming up. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. All right, so I'm talking to Jesse Neville with the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. So can you give me the background on what the Uhuru 3 are? What is going on with that?
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very, very honored to be able to speak with you and all of the listeners in Eugene, Oregon, especially because the African People's Socialist Party and the African People's Solidarity Committee actually have a long history of organizing in Eugene, and several members of the Solidarity Movement who are still active today first came into contact with the African People's Socialist Party in Eugene, Oregon, many decades ago, about 40 years ago. So to answer your question, the first thing I would say is that Uhuru, the word Uhuru, means freedom in Swahili. The Uhuru movement is a movement led by the African People's Socialist Party, which is an all-Black or all-African organization that was formed in 1972, co-founded by its chairman and leader, Amale Yeshitela. And the African People's Socialist Party was created to complete the Black Revolution of the 1960s. It was created based on the understanding that Black people in the United States and around the world are one people, that they are African people who have been forcibly dispersed by the colonial system of slavery and genocide that was built on the backs of African people, that this country, the United States and Europe and the entire colonial world economy that we know today, and which has existed for over 600 years, was constructed on what Chairman Amale Yeshitela calls the twin pillars of the enslavement of African people and the genocide against the indigenous people of this land and the theft of their land. And the African People's Socialist Party was created to overturn that reality and to bring about a world where African and colonized peoples are free and self-determining and have control of their own lives, resources, and the destinies of their children. And one of the things that the African People's Socialist Party and Chairman Amale Yeshitela did 4 years after their founding is they created an organization under their leadership called the African People's Solidarity Committee. That's the organization that I have an honor to be a member of, and which is chaired by Penny Hess, who has been a part of this movement since the founding of APSC in 1976. And the purpose of that component of the Uhuru movement was to extend the struggle for African liberation into the white community, into the white colonizer or settler population in this country and around the world, to win white people like myself to recognize that our true interests are not with uniting with and being complicit with a system that assaults and commits war and atrocities and genocide all around the world, and including against African and colonized peoples inside US borders, that our true interests are to refuse to be complicit, to stand in principled, genuine solidarity with African people and with all of the colonized and exploited peoples of the world who are fighting for national liberation and self-determination. The focus of our work as the Solidarity Movement is to organize white people to support and contribute to reparations to African people, the return of the stolen wealth that has been ripped off and exploited and extracted violently from African people for hundreds of years, to build and benefit the wealth of the white population. And it calls on us to recognize that as white people historically, we have been at the forefront of carrying out the violence and the terror against African people and indigenous people in order to, you know, find our place on top of the pedestal built on their oppression and subjugation. And this organization represents a way for us to end that legacy of the slave master and embrace a new relationship with African people that isn't built on oppression, but is built on principled solidarity, working under their leadership and going back into our own communities to build a movement for white solidarity with Black power.
All right. And I just want to point out that you're not a religious organization.
That's correct. That's correct. The African People's Socialist Party is a socialist organization, as its title states. And it's an organization that is guided by a political philosophy called African internationalism, developed by Chairman Omali Shetela, which states that the struggle faced by African people in the United States and around the world is not against racism, the ideas in the minds of white people or those who would try to oppress African people. The struggle is actually against colonialism. Colonialism is a system, a material, economic, and political system, a mode of production that is backed up by state power. And the struggle for African people to be free is not a struggle to change the ideas in the minds of white people. It's a struggle for African people to actually gain power over their own lives so that the ideas in the minds of white people are irrelevant.
All right. And so why did the FBI raid your headquarters? Tell me about the FBI raid that happened that coincided with the Ukraine invasion.
So on July 29th of 2022, it was a Friday morning. It was pre-dawn, 5 a.m. in St. Louis, Missouri, where I'm currently located. And it was coordinated to be a simultaneous raid in two different states at the same time. So in St. Petersburg, Florida, the raids began at 6 a.m. in that time zone. And this raid was not an FBI agent in a suit and tie showing up at someone's door with their briefcase in hand and showing their ID and presenting a search warrant. This was a violent, militaristic SWAT team kind of siege that was executed against these seven homes and offices. They came into the home of Chairman Omali Shetela and his wife, Ona Zenea Shetela, who's also the deputy chair of the African People's Socialist Party in North St. Louis, Missouri. They came with flashbang grenades. They came with assault rifles, dozens of FBI agents in full military gear. They used drones. They trained the laser red sights of their rifles on the chairman's chest as he came down the steps of his home, and handcuffed the chairman and deputy chair Ona, told them to sit on the curb in front of their house, which they refused to do, because that is a typical tactic of the state to try to humiliate and degrade African people. They refused to do that. And they proceeded to ransack their home and six other homes and offices throughout Florida and Missouri for upwards of 7 hours that morning. They took countless electronic devices, phones, computers, notebooks, calendars, planners, things like that. And they didn't show us search warrants, by the way, until hours later. They left a search warrant on the kitchen table or something like that. And at some point during these raids, the FBI agents informed us that these properties had been named in a search warrant relating to an indictment that had been unsealed out of Tampa, Florida, of a Russian national for allegedly conspiring with people in the United States to work as Russian agents in this bogus, absurd plot that the US government created. That, you know, claimed that we were working with the Russians to try to sow discord in the United States. And we were characterized, we meaning Chairman Omali Yeshitela, who's the primary target, along with Penny Hess, the chair of the African People's Solidarity Committee, myself, and Akile Anai, who's another leader in the Uhuru movement and the APSP. We were characterized as unindicted co-conspirators in the initial indictment that was released on July 29th, 2022. And then 9 months later, 9 months went by. And on April 18th of 2023, we were indicted. We were indicted by a federal grand jury in Tampa, Florida. They issued a superseding indictment, which charged Chairman Omali Yeshitela, Penny Hess, and myself of two criminal charges, two federal felony crimes, one which was conspiring with the Russians to commit an offense against the United States government, and two, which was the main charge, was to actually function as illegal secret agents of the Russian government in this alleged conspiracy to try to sow discord or cause dissension in the United States. And in terms of the question you asked, why did they do this? Why did they target the Uhuru movement? You know, the answer to that question is very deep, because they targeted the Uhuru movement and Chairman Omali Yeshitela for the same reason that in the 1920s, the FBI in its early stage targeted Marcus Garvey, the leader of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, who had built a similar movement to the Uhuru movement at that time, which was organizing millions of African people around the world in a struggle to liberate and unify Africa and free African people from colonial domination. They targeted the Uhuru movement for the same reason they targeted Martin Luther King and Malcolm X in the 1960s, for the same reason they assassinated 30 members of the Black Panther Party and imprisoned over 300 members of the Black Panther Party in 1969, because this is a colonial state, and the colonial state exists for the purpose of trying to, by force, suppress the basic human aspiration of African people to be self-determining and to be free. And that is what Chairman Omali Yeshitela represents. He's 82 years old. He will be turning 83 in just a few weeks on October 9th. And the idea that Chairman Omali Yeshitela or any African person in this country would need Russians or anyone to tell him that he has a right to fight for his oppression, to involve him in a struggle for his freedom, is absolutely absurd and even racist and anti-African. So this was the basis of these bogus charges. And the last thing I would say is that, you know, when this indictment came down on April 18th, and even before that, after the raids the previous year, immense support started flooding in for the Uhuru movement from people of all different political backgrounds. Because if you read the indictment against the Uhuru 3, what you will see is that every single, what the prosecutors call overt acts that they alleged that the Uhuru movement carried out as part of this so-called conspiracy, every single one of those overt acts was in fact not an act, but an example of political speech, which is supposed to be protected by the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which is meant to protect the right to criticize the government, to engage in political speech and dissenting views of the United States government. They accused the Uhuru movement of publishing articles on theburningspear.com, holding a campaign to file a petition with the United Nations to charge the United States government with violation of the UN Convention on the Prevention, the UN Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide for its treatment of Black people in America, and other similar kinds of political speech consistent with the message that the Uhuru movement has been working to amplify for more than 50 years of its existence. So this was something that caused a huge outcry, and the Uhuru movement under the chairman's leadership formed an organization called Hands Off Uhuru, the Hands Off Uhuru Anti-Colonial Free Speech Coalition, which brought together forces from across the political and ideological spectrum to defend the Uhuru movement's right and African people's right to engage in political speech without fear of imprisonment or loss of life at the hands of the U.S. government.
All right, but so I just want to point out that it is what other groups saw this as a free speech issue because they saw that it affected their right to free speech because yes. All you guys have been doing for 50 years, you've been doing the same thing for 50 years is asking people to help out with Black reparations. And that includes other countries like Russia.
Right.
So, all right. So what happened in the trial? How did the FBI showed up at the trial with not very well prepared, did they?
Certainly not. I want to start off by saying that the support that has been given and is continuing to be given to the Uhuru movement from many different people has been really profound. And I specifically want to shout out Lauren Reagan, who's right there in Eugene, Oregon. She's a brilliant attorney, and she's the director of an organization called the Civil Liberties Defense Center. Lauren was one of those people who was instrumental in the early days of this campaign, this fight back, following the raids on July 29th, 2022, who worked with us to identify lawyers who would be up to the task of going in and fighting not just these charges, but the whole system, the whole U.S. government. And thanks to the great work that Lauren did, we were able to assemble. And also thanks to incredible donations that people gave, because we had to raise almost $500,000 to be able to deal with not only the repairs on the buildings that were attacked, but also to hire lawyers. And we were able to put together an incredible legal team. I just want to quickly shout out our attorneys, Addie Griffin, Tom Inskeep, Mutaki Akbar, Angela Rainey, and Leonard Goodman. And Leonard Goodman actually came onto this case pro bono because he so strongly believed in the righteousness of this cause. And these lawyers did an incredible job in the trial that took place in the federal court just a few weeks ago in Tampa, Florida. So what happened in that trial is that through cross-examination, it was exposed that the U.S. government had zero evidence whatsoever of any time that Chairman Omali Yeshitela or the Uhuru movement had ever agreed to function under the direction or control of the Russian government or of anyone other than themselves and Black people and the struggle of Black people for their freedom. And, you know, this was an incredible trial. It was a political trial. And the laws that they used to charge us were political laws that were created in the 1930s as part of, you know, the efforts of the U.S. government at that time to stifle any kind of speech that was critical of the United States. And you can't underestimate the lengths that the U.S. government went through in order to make this prosecution. First of all, they conducted these over-the-top military-style raids. They expended tens of millions of dollars, if not more, on orchestrating this prosecution. They involved hundreds of FBI agents and other government personnel. They ended up calling 14 witnesses to the stand, the government, I mean, called 14 witnesses to the stand. 12 of those witnesses were FBI agents. The other two were so-called expert witnesses who had to admit under cross-examination that they knew nothing about our case, that they hadn't looked at any of the evidence in our case, and that they claimed they couldn't remember how much they had been paid by the government to testify. And even leading up to this trial, the State Department actually put out on their so-called Rewards for Justice website a $10 million reward for any person who would step forward to collaborate with the U.S. government's prosecution of the Uhuru movement. And after all of that, they couldn't find a single person, a single actual person, to come forward and testify against us. And they had to rely on calling their own FBI agents to the stand in order to introduce the evidence. And in terms of the evidence, they gathered in their process of creating this prosecution, upwards of 20 terabytes of digital data that they stole from the Uhuru movement. And one of our lawyers calculated that 20 terabytes of data is equivalent to 2.5 million books worth of information. And out of all of this evidence that they gathered, one FBI agent after another was forced under cross-examination to testify under oath that they had failed to locate a single shred of evidence that the Uhuru movement had ever agreed to work under the direction or control of the Russian government. They had accused us of being involved in a Russian effort to interfere in the elections that took place in St. Petersburg, Florida in 2017 and 2019, when the Uhuru movement ran Akile and I and myself for local office on a platform of reparations to the Black community. The FBI agents had to admit under oath that they had not found a single piece of evidence that we had engaged in anything approximating election interference. And on the other hand, we called no witnesses. We didn't call a single witness. We just, through cross-examination and through the opening and closing arguments of our attorneys, and through evidence that we were able to introduce, we were able to show the jury that the Uhuru movement is not for sale. Chairman Amalia Shetela is not for sale, that he is a revolutionary, as our lawyers told the jury. He is a man of conviction, and he is someone who has for his entire life fought for the liberation of all Black people worldwide. And the jury was able to come to an incredibly important verdict, and it was a mixed verdict. The prosecutors lied and used distortions of the law and deliberately confusing jury instructions to force the jury to return an inconsistent verdict that found us guilty of conspiracy. But more importantly, the jury found us not guilty of being Russian agents. And this was incredibly important because, as the chairman said in his statement that he issued after the verdict came down, the goal of the United States government in waging this political attack against the Uhuru movement was much bigger than simply trying to convict the chairman and the Uhuru Three and put us in prison. They had a political goal. Their political goal was to use this legal process of this prosecution to discredit speech, to discredit criticism by African people of their treatment at the hands of the U.S. government, to make it so that the African liberation movement and the voice of African people itself would have no legitimacy and would be reduced to simply being a mouthpiece for somebody else. So that when Black people speak out against their murders at the hands of the police, the killings of Black men and women in this country, the mass incarceration of Black people in this country, the gentrification of their communities, that the U.S. government could just say, well, the Russians told them to say that. And the jury was able to reject that. The jury was able to unite with the basic legitimacy of the voice of African people struggling for self-determination, and to say that, no, African people have agency. They have their own sovereignty. They are their own liberators. Chairman Amalia Shetela and the Uhuru movement work for Black people, not for Russians. And that was what the chairman said even on the steps of the courthouse when he came out of that court on the day the verdict came down. So we intend to appeal the bogus conviction on the conspiracy charge, and we're very confident that we will be successful in getting that conviction overturned. But we feel like this victory should be an inspiration to anyone that the U.S. government is in a state of absolute desperation. This This prosecution was not a sign of their strength. This prosecution was a sign of the weakness and desperation of a system that cannot even withstand spoken criticism of their crimes against the peoples of the world.
Well, and I just want to emphasize that this was an all-white jury in a fairly conservative state that still sided with the Uhuru movement.
And, that's right.
So, and the Uhuru movement, the conspiracy that's going on, the Uhuru movement is basically a community organization that's creating community centers in ghettos. Like they've built a basketball court, and they have a doula program. Can you tell me about the programs that that they're actually doing?
And that's extremely important, because that is what the Uhuru movement is, and that is the real explanation for why the U.S. government made this assault, is because they don't want to see those movements, those programs grow and succeed. And what the Uhuru movement has done for over 50 years is they have worked to carry out a strategy that Chairman Amali Shtela calls dual and contending power, recognizing that the United States government and this entire colonial capitalist system, of which the U.S. government is the world headquarters, it's built on the oppression and exploitation of African people. So it actually has, this system has its basis, its foundation in African people being separated from their own resources and having no ability to produce and reproduce life for themselves. And the Uhuru movement has worked to build an anti-colonial capacity for African working class people in communities throughout this country and throughout the world, in Africa and Europe and other parts of the world, wherever African people are, to actually have self-government, to have political and economic power. And those programs include here in St. Louis, in the North Side, in the predominantly Black and deeply exploited and impoverished North Side of St. Louis. The Uhuru movement has many programs that fall under the umbrella of a project called the Black Power Blueprint. So that includes the basketball court that you just referenced. It includes creating Uhuru House community centers here in St. Louis, in St. Petersburg, in Oakland. It has included creating farmers markets, community gardens in the African community, working to build a doula training program to train African women to be birth workers. And this is part of addressing the genocidal conditions of African women facing maternal and infant mortality in this country. These are the programs that the Uhuru movement has built. And these programs are not charity. They are supported by the community and controlled by the community itself, and often from contributions from white people who support these programs as a stand of reparations and solidarity with African people having power and self-determination over their own lives. So this is who the Uhuru movement is. And it's really important that everybody who opposes what this government is doing and has done to the Uhuru movement continue to support these projects and do everything that we can to see these projects flourish and grow.
Wow, that's very conspiratorial. Well, so what do you think is going to happen with the conspiracy trial, if there, whatever you can say legally? I mean, how is that going to go? What are you going to say to the judge?
Well, that's in the works right now. There will be motions filed to contest the verdict on the conspiracy conviction. And then there will be a motion of intent to appeal that will be filed. Right now, we are preparing for a sentencing hearing in Tampa, Florida on November 25th. And people can support our campaign around the sentencing hearing by going to handsoffuhuru.org. One of the things that we're encouraging all of our supporters to do is to actually write letters to the judge testifying to the character of Chairman Amali Shtela and the Uhuru III, and presenting, you know, from your perspective, why you feel that whatever sentence the judge imposes should not restrict Chairman Amali Shtela and the Uhuru movement from continuing to move freely in the world and do the work they've been doing for more than 50 years to uplift and empower the African community. So that's a campaign that we have going on right now. And as far as the conspiracy conviction, we will have a lot more to say about that in the coming weeks and months. But I think that there's a very strong basis to get that conviction thrown out, because it's completely inconsistent and illogical that, you know, we were found guilty of, quote unquote, conspiring to act as foreign agents of Russia without notifying the Attorney General's office. But we were found not guilty of acting as foreign agents of Russia without notifying the Attorney General's office. So again, I think it was the consequence of dirty tricks and lies and distortions of the law and incredibly confusing jury instructions that were given to the jury that led to that conviction. But we feel confident that we'll be able to expose it and defeat it.
Right. And if you were to lose the conspiracy case, that would cause a chilling effect for other organizations, right?
I think the entire prosecution, the conspiracy charge and the foreign agents charge was intended to have a chilling effect. Absolutely. A chilling effect on free speech. And I think that's one of the things that is so important about the stance that Chairman O'Malley Shetela has taken, and something that was even recognized by our attorneys, is that the real precedent that the chairman set and the Uhuru movement set with this case is the precedent of having the courage to fight back and to not be silenced. Chairman O'Malley Shetela never stopped speaking to the public. In fact, his first statement to the public following the FBI raids on July 29th was that day on July 29th, like an hour or two after the last armored vehicle left his home. He held a press conference on the steps of his home to speak out about what had just happened and to denounce what the U.S. government was doing and to put out who the Uhuru movement really is and who he really is and what he's about. So that has been incredibly important. And, you know, I think it's important that we continue to defend the Uhuru movement and stand with the Uhuru movement as a stand for free speech, as a stand for the right of anyone and everybody to exercise their constitutional right to freedom of speech and political association. And one of the things that Chairman O'Malley Shetela has pointed out is that the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution was ratified by the Congress in 1791, which means that at the time the First Amendment was written, it was at a time when African people were still enslaved. Africans were in chains and on plantations in this country when the First Amendment was ratified. So the First Amendment was not meant for African people. It was meant for white people. It was meant for one group of white settlers who were attempting to free themselves from the tyranny of another group of white settlers in the form of the English crown. And, you know, essentially what happened, as the chairman says, is that in freeing ourselves from tyranny, we adopted a new form of tyranny in the form of the colonial oppression of African people and the indigenous people of this land. And any semblance of democratic rights that African people have been afforded or has been made accessible to African people in this country has been a consequence of blood, sweat, and tears, life and death struggle. The right to vote, the right to go to quality schools, et cetera. All of this has been as a consequence of serious life and death political struggle by African people. And, you know, that's why it's so important for white people to understand that when they attack the First Amendment right of Chairman O'Malley Shetela, they're attacking our First Amendment right. They're attacking a First Amendment that was not even created for Chairman O'Malley Shetela in the first place. So ironically, what the U.S. government has done with this prosecution is they've positioned the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party as the champion of free speech, as the guardian of free speech and the First Amendment against the United States government that is ostensibly supposed to be upholding and protecting that First Amendment right. And again, that's why so many people have rallied behind Chairman O'Malley and the Uhuru movement, and have seen this case as actually the most important free speech case of our times. It's a test case for the First Amendment. It's a case that was meant to test the ability of the U.S. government to suppress political speech if they want to say that your speech was somehow directed by a foreign government simply on the basis that your views may align from time to time with the views of a foreign government. And we saw hints of what the U.S. government was attempting to normalize with this prosecution when Nancy Pelosi went on national TV, last year and accused protesters in New York who were supporting the Palestinian people of being pawns of Russia and said that the FBI should investigate them. And there's been similar remarks by other U.S. Government officials, that clearly indicate that this case was meant to be the canary in the coal mine.
All right. So I haven't heard about this on national public radio, this trial at all. I've heard it on Amy Goodman. But so what would reparations look like? I mean, Martin Luther King advocated, what if we took the economy would actually be better for all of us if blacks had reparations, especially if we took the trillions of dollars that we spend on war and gave that to black reparations. And do you think Kamala Harris is going to be in favor of black reparations?
No, no, I don't. I think, I mean, the African People's Socialist Party's position is that, regardless of who is selected to be the figurehead of U.S. imperialism, whether it's Kamala Harris or anybody else, that the essence of this social system that the U.S. government is created to protect is one that is fundamentally predicated on the oppression of African people and the theft of their resources. And it's a parasitic system. It's a parasitic mode of production. It requires the stolen resources and value of stolen labor of African people for this colonial economy to function and to sustain itself. And that's why the chairman has always said that when this economic system goes into crisis, that crisis is a direct consequence of resistance by African and other colonized peoples, Arabs and the people of Venezuela and the people of Cuba and other peoples around the world who strike out for their self-determination. That fundamentally challenges and destabilizes a parasitic economy that can't function without the subjugation, the domination of the majority of the peoples on the planet Earth. And that's why I really appreciate your question about reparations, because reparations from the point of view of Chairman O'Malley and the African People's Socialist Party is a revolutionary demand. It's an anti-colonial demand. It's a demand for the complete return and repossession by African people of everything that has been stolen from them by this social system for hundreds of years. All of the resources, the stolen labor, the value of stolen labor, even the ideas, the knowledge, the science, the art, the culture, the genius, everything which has been stolen from African people systematically under this social system for hundreds of years must go back into the hands of African working class people fighting to free themselves and free the world from a system that's built on one group of people profiteering at the expense of another. So reparations is a revolutionary demand, and it's one that the Uhuru movement has worked to popularize for the majority of the time that it has existed. In fact, Chairman O'Malley Shatila in the early 1980s, created a campaign to make reparations a household word. His goal was that reparations would not be a subject that was quarantined in legal or legislative debates or as an academic subject in college classrooms, but was the property of the African masses, was a demand by African people to regain control of all of the resources that have been stolen from them. And this is a message that I think more and more white people are able to hear and are able to get behind. And the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, the organization that I represent, has members in over 130 cities, including in Eugene and in Portland and other places in Oregon, of white people who believe in reparations, who believe that reparations is not a punitive demand. It's not a punishment for white people. It's actually an opportunity for redemption. It's an opportunity for us to relinquish our attachment to a system that requires our complicity in order to function, a system that actually separates us from the rest of the peoples on the planet Earth and allows us to enter into a genuine connection to the human family for the first time. And that's why our slogan is unity through reparations. The US government charged us with being involved in a conspiracy to sow division, to create division in this country, when actually the purpose of the Uhuru movement is to unite everybody who can be united with a just and righteous struggle of African people to be free so that everybody in the world can be free.
All right, Jesse Neville, of the chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, anything else you want to say?
I want to thank you so much again for having me on and for helping to get the word out about this this movement and this campaign and this trial, because as you kind of suggested earlier, there's been a concerted effort by many in the ruling class media, or what they like to call the mainstream media, to silence this movement and to prevent people from even knowing that this trial happened and that we won on this important foundational charge of defeating this charge that the Uhuru movement were foreign agents. In fact, on the day that the verdict came down, the Department of Justice published a press release announcing that we had been convicted for conspiring as Russian agents, but they did not mention in their press release that we were found not guilty of being Russian agents. So this is really important that the world can know that the US government lied and they lost, and the Uhuru movement told the truth and won. And we're going to continue winning, and we invite everybody to be a part of this historic fight back and go to handsoffuhuru.org to find out how you can support it.
All right, Jesse Neville, chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, thank you for your time and your great work.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Jesse Neville, chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and you can find out more information and what you can do at handsoffuhuru.org. That's handsoffuhuru.org. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting independent media. On KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio.
Step, Bob, I left him on the vest. applied to U.S. presidents as were applied to the Nazis after World War II. That every single one of them, every last rich white one of them from Truman on would have been hung to death and shot. And this current administration is no exception. It should be hung and tried and shot. As any war criminal should be. But the challenges that we face, they go way beyond administrations, way beyond elections, way beyond every 4 years of pulling levers, way beyond that. Because this whole rotten system has become so vicious and cruel that in order to sustain itself, it needs to destroy entire countries and profit from their reconstruction in order to survive. And that's not a system that changes every 4 years. It's a system that we have to break down generation after generation after generation after generation.
Against the Machine from Los Angeles, California.
Set. Man's waiting for the pump and the price is set. And the price is set. fast grade for the bump and the practice set. And the practice